We invite you to join us on our hunt for all things spooky.
We're here for the tricks and the treats.
I'm Elise.
And I'm Haley.
And this is Easy Bake Coven.
Hello.
Hello.
You made it here.
God bless it. Bless it.
Satan is shining upon us today.
He apparently is in all his glory. His butthole glory. At some point, I also updated Zoom and the normally I'd say like start meeting and like the my meeting would open and you'd be in my meeting room. Well, now that doesn't happen. You're not in there. So I have to like go back through old emails to find the link and start like, why? I hate
why
updating
would they
shit.
Do that?
I hate
I know.
Updating.
This is why I don't. I literally do not do software updates.
I didn't. I was like in the middle of a project. No, I didn't. I just restarted my computer and it did it for me. I was like, you motherfucker. Like, I didn't want to update anything.
I want things to stay the same as they always are.
I hate change.
I don't like change at all. Even if it's good, I'm like, no, God. I don't want it. No. I want things to be the same.
Well, and everything is like, you know, like I have no free time because of the baby and any little time I have, like I have to use it so wisely.
It's precious.
Yeah. And so like I was in the middle of a project, work project, and then my computer updated and that made all the hard drives like freak out. And so then I had to like resync everything, which took like two nap periods, which was like those are periods I needed to edit. Just a shit show. So
Yeah.
How are you?
Good.
Well, isn't that nice?
I just finished work, ran outside, moved my sprinkler, poured myself a very generous glass of wine.
That is very generous for you.
I was like, well, I'm not going to go back upstairs in the middle of the podcast.
Ben really did me wrong.
The fuck, Benjamin?
I know.
Well, he can come refill. Are you in your dad's house?
Yeah, I'm at my dad's house. My dad was like, I was like, Dad, can I record over there? And he's like, yeah, sure. And I said, are you going to be in there? And he said, yeah, he's not, but he thought he was going to be. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I need it to be quiet. He's like, I can be quiet. I was like, can you?
Well, we've heard your leaf blower before, Rick.
Are you going to bring the leaf blower into the house?
Starts like, Elise, you have something in your hair. Just like your whole mouth is like, I could literally see that
happening. I
wouldn't
put it past him.
Him being like, oh, is this loud? Yeah. Is this leaf blower that I'm blowing at your literal face loud?
God. Yeah, so I'm really excited to hear some shit that has nothing to do with my life and drink while listening to it. So
this has nothing to do with your life.
Thanks, Satan.
I'm going back to my roots this evening, which is drinking a lot of wine while talking about an unsolved mystery.
Oh, yes.
Yes. That's my favorite thing to do.
I love them.
So I was like, you know what? It's funny because I was like, this is something I've wanted to cover for a really long time. But I was like, I don't think it could make a whole episode. How many times have I said this? Then I start. So I like gathered two similar stories and I was like, well, I'll just do both of them. And then I started doing this one and like eight pages in, I'm like, I don't think we're going to have to do a second story.
That's how I felt about the bear attack, the Sankabetsu bear story. I was like, this can't fill a whole episode. I'll have to fill in other bear stories. And I was like, oh, shit. No. Yeah, I can.
This could be a literal Martin Scorsese film.
Like starring Leonardo DiCaprio. Another bear movie.
Yes. We know he likes to make them.
I mean, yeah, come on. Okay, well, I'm ready for it. I'm excited.
Okay. I like haven't had to cough all day and now I'm like my voice.
It's Satan.
Is it quite right? I just want to do good, you know.
Satan is against good, Haley.
I just want to do bad.
There you go.
Okay, this story begins with the patriarch of our tale, George Sauter, who was born in Sardinia in 1895.
Ooh, we're going back in time.
Ooh. Yes. And at the age of 13, he and an older brother made the long voyage to America to begin a new life. But when they got to Ellis Island, his brother turned around and decided to go back to Italy.
What?
Yeah. So like what? So this left 13-year-old George alone in a new country where he did not speak the language.
Wait, how old was his brother when he decided to just say like, fuck
he
you,
was
George?
His older brother. So
brother.
I know. It makes you wonder like what was going on for this family. Mm. Like, were they sent away? Did he want to leave? Mm. There's some intrigue around like the beginning of George's life in Italy because like he didn't talk about it ever.
I have no clue where the story's going, so I'm really excited.
Mm-hmm. It's gonna be bad and good.
My favorite.
So I do not know how this man managed to do this as a literal child, but he made his way to Pennsylvania from Ellis Island as a 13-year-old.
They don't make him like that anymore.
And found a job, started working on the fucking railroads. Right? He carried water and supplies to the laborers. So he was like the supply boy, I guess.
Water boy.
Again, not sure how he was like living and working and doing adult things as a little tiny baby 13-year-old. But after a few years, he moved to Smithers, West Virginia, and started working as a driver for like a trucking company. And by all accounts, he was like a smart, ambitious guy, like now teenager, and started his own trucking company.
What?
This is like essentially the American dream, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like just you can just show up as a little immigrant boy
and start your own trucking company.
Doesn't speak a lick of English and like end up with your own company and like a happy life.
Wow. Now
it used to be that simple.
We're lucky if they work at Subway.
Like I'm like I have a fucking master's degree and I like have to sell pictures of my feet online just to pay my mortgage.
Haley Ray on OnlyFans. Just kidding.
Not yet.
Not yet. We're not that desperate.
So at first he was like transporting like dirt for construction companies, like bringing dirt to like fill construction sites or whatever. Sure. And then later started transporting freight and eventually coal. So I guess like what I don't know a lot about America, but I think West Virginia, that's like coal country.
Yeah, that right? Sounds right.
It's like a right out of a John Denver song.
Yep. Yep. John that's Denver all, mixed all with Zoolander because you remember he's got the black lung pop.
Yes. So he's transporting the coal that these poor men are digging out of the earth and slowly sacrificing dying. Their bodies for. Mm-hmm. Again, the American dream.
Yep.
So the story goes that there was this local store in town called the Music Box and he liked to visit it. And one day he met the owner's daughter, Jenny Cipriani. Hmm. And she'd also come over from Italy. They were also Italian, but she was younger. She was three when they came to America.
Oh, I thought you were going to say when he met her. I was like, oh.
She was three, so she was a little baby, and he was a predator.
This is not an unsolved mystery. It's pretty clear.
She was also like, she was also an adult. Like because of fucking sexism, there's like no...
Sure.
Like none of her story. I don't know where she came from. Italy. That's all we know. Her dad owned a shop, and she like worked there or hung out there. But you can find a fucking biography about George sexism. Mm-hmm. So they fall in love. They get married, and they start having so many babies.
Oh boy.
Just popping out children. Between 1923 and 1943, they had 10 children.
Jeez.
Yeah, and this is like. Late enough in the development of America that they all survived into like childhood.
Wow.
Pretty crazy. They lived in a city called Fayetteville, West Virginia. Mm-hmm. You know it?
I know Fayetteville, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ah, oh, and I said it right.
You did. Good job.
I was like, Fayetteville. Nope, that's not
Fayetteville-y.
It.
Fayetteville. Nope.
You know, I could really ruin the name of that town if I wanted to, but I didn't.
You nailed it.
I guess there was like a huge Italian immigrant population there.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Like a ton of Italians. Huh. Yeah. And they were like a very happy part of that community, the Sodders. They were by all accounts like really really well respected in town. Like everyone liked them. They were a happy family and he had his trucking company.
Did you read anywhere if Sodder was like, did he change his name to that?
Yeah. His name was Giorgio like Sadu or something like that.
I was
going
to say, Sodder like does not sound Italian.
No.
Oh, that makes me so sad.
Yeah, he changed his name. I know. He changed his name when he came to America, when he arrived here. Mm. Which is, that is sad. He was very outspoken about his political opinions. Mm. And I think they were in like this interesting position as like a newly American family. You know, like everyone that's like their extended family, everyone they're surrounded by is all like very Italian. Mm-hmm. They're both from Italy and they're watching World War II unfold as now Americans and sort of watching it all from a distance. And he was very clear about his disdain for Mussolini and shared his political stance with like everyone in the community, which is funny because I don't think that's a super hot take. Like Mussolini is not a good
dude. No, he's like,
but
douche.
I'm like, maybe back then for Italians, like we have the benefit of hindsight where we can be like, look at all the bad things Mussolini did. I don't know if maybe like for Italian Americans living in America during that time period, like it seemed like it was like controversial that he was like, I don't like Mussolini. Yeah, which I find kind of strange. Because I'm like, Mussolini.
Yeah, he's like,
we agree on train timeliness, and that is about it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all we have in common. So, yeah, I don't know. But apparently one thing that he would not talk about was his childhood in Italy and what caused him to leave.
Hmm.
It could be absolutely nothing, right? It could be a shitty childhood. It could have been poverty. Some people say there's mafia ties.
Ooh, and I love that.
Come in later in the story, but maybe there's some mafia something. There is a lot of legend and a lot of lore surrounding this case, and it happened so long ago that sometimes it's hard to sort through to the actual truth of what happened. And like in some situations, like we will not ever know like the actual truth. And like I found, like for instance, newspaper articles from the time that say different things. Like,
did you use two newspapers.com?
Well, you know, it's funny, if you just search it, like they come up. I didn't even have to.
Damn it.
I probably will to like look for like cool pictures, like, snippets. Yeah. And like photos. But yeah. Like, and in one of the newspaper articles, they called her Jeannie.
Ugh.
But like everywhere else, she's Jenny. So I really think that one specific newspaper fucked it up. But then I'm like, maybe she was Jeannie. And then one.
Right. Only one got it like, right.
One got it wrong, mm-hmm. and then everybody else stuck to that because so it was like a bigger
annoying though.
Yeah, so
we see that I'm all like, the time.
I kept being like, okay, I'd read one source, like type something out, and then like read another source and be like, oh, but that one's wrong. Okay, so then I'd read like four and be like, what's the like general average? Like,
totally. I am
so where there are like times where there's multiple different stories, I try to acknowledge that. So I'm doing the best that I can.
We appreciate it.
But there was a lot of gossip, lore, legend. So do it that way you will.
But I'm impressed that it's like made it into the newspapers. That means it was like a big deal, whatever it is. I don't know what's going to happen.
It might, you might, as I'm talking, you might be like, oh, I've heard of this before.
Okay.
Maybe. My parents hadn't. But they were like, what's the podcast on tonight?
My dad always asks me.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm like, I don't know what tonight is.
Yeah, it's not my week.
Yeah. Come on, Dad.
And so I like started telling them, and my mom was like, really? Wow, that's fascinating. And then was like asking questions, and I was like telling her the story, and I was like, oh,
I'm perfect. So well read.
Hooked. So the story really begins on December 24th, Christmas Eve of 1945. The second oldest solder son, Joe, who was 21, he had joined the military and left home. So he was not like living in the family home anymore. And Marion was the oldest daughter. I read in multiple places that she was 19 and some places that she was 17. So she was somewhere between 17 and 19 years old, mm-hmm. and she was still living at home. And at the time, she was working at a dime store in town. So it's Christmas Eve. She finishes up her shift and comes home, and she brought some gifts for her younger siblings, just like little trinkets, Christmas gifts. Yeah. Yeah. Martha, who was 12 years old, also Jenny, who was 8. I'm like, please do not name your children after you when something tragic happens in your family, because then when someone makes a podcast, it's going to be so confusing that there's two Georges and two Jennys.
Also, I'd like to say they really leaned into the American names. Martha, George, Jenny. Like, come on. Your Italian names are so beautiful.
Right? Like, why? They're just trying to, you know,
blend in. Yep.
Jenny was 8 and Betty, who was 5. And they
Betty,
were so
that's
excited.
Jeez. Right?
Like, this could be an episode of Mad Men. Like,
is this, what is that show? The Brady Bunch? Is this the Brady Bunch?
These are the Solder Bunch.
Yep.
They were so excited to play with their like new toys that their sister got them that they were like, can we stay up late? And their mom was like, yeah, it's Christmas Eve. Right. Go for it.
YOLO.
Just a quick chug of my wine.
YOLO. It applies here too.
Speaking of YOLO. So they decide to stay up late. Mom's like, whatever. John, who was 22, and George Jr., who was 16, had already gone to bed because they had been at work with their dad all day. They worked for their dad's trucking company. So they were really tired. So dad and the two oldest boys had already gone to bed. At 10 o'clock, the mom, who is also named Jenny, so I might call her Mama's daughter sometimes because there's too many Jennies, she decided that she was going to go to bed. And she told the kids, you can stay up a little bit longer as long as the boys, the two oldest boys that were still awake, Maurice, who was 14, and Louis, who was 9, remember to bring in the cows and feed the chickens. Like, make sure you do your nighttime chores before you go to bed. As long as you remember to do that, you guys can stay up a little bit longer.
How did they do, like, George, Jenny, Betty, Maurice?
I know. Like, was that a love child from a Parisian gentleman?
Doesn't really fit into the other names. Anyway, go ahead.
I know. I thought that, too. How funny. Our brains work the same.
Same.
Okay, so the kids agree, and mom goes upstairs with Sylvia, who was the youngest. She was 2 years old, and she slept in a crib in George and Jenny's room. So at 12:30 a.m., Jenny, Mama Jenny, is awoken by the phone ringing. So she goes downstairs and she answers it, and it's a woman that she doesn't recognize on the other end of the line. And the woman asks for someone by name that Jenny doesn't know. And she's like, oh, I'm so sorry. I think you have the wrong number. And in the background, she can hear laughter and glasses clinking, like people are like a Christmas toasting Eve party. Or celebrating. Yeah, like a Christmas Eve party. But then she said that the woman laughed weirdly. Mm. She had a weird laugh. That was Jenny's like quote. Maybe like a drunken Christmas Eve wrong number, but weird. When she was up answering the phone, she noticed that the kids hadn't drawn the curtains or shut off the lights, which is usually something that they do when they go to bed. But she noticed that Marion had fallen asleep on the couch. The oldest daughter had fallen asleep. So she's like, oh, maybe she said to the other kids, you know, you guys go up to bed. I'm going to come up soon. And then maybe you just fell asleep, you know, sitting on the couch, whatever. So she figured the rest of the kids must have gone up to the attic where their bedrooms were. Marion fell asleep accidentally. I know.
To the attic.
So she closes the curtains, shuts off all the lights, goes back upstairs and goes to bed. At 1 a.m., Jenny is awoken again, this time by the sound of something hitting the roof.
No.
She said it sounded like a loud bang and then a rolling noise.
Nope.
But she's like half asleep. She's already like been woken up, just gone back to sleep. So she listens for a moment. She doesn't hear anything else. And she just goes back to sleep.
Jenny.
Half an hour later, she's woken again at 1:30. But this time it's the smell of smoke that wakes her up. So she gets up and she sees that the room that George uses as his office is on fire.
Oh my God.
Also, you have 9 children and 2 adults living in your house and you have space for an office?
Yeah, really.
Like, damn,
the kids
well
are in the attic and the George has an office. Kids are sleeping in the attic.
Like 2 to 4 kids per room and you have an office? You don't need an office. You need a desk in the family room.
Wait, was George
home? Maybe he's literally.
Or was he out driving?
Yeah.
He was. Okay.
No, he's home. Okay. He just gone to bed earlier.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So she notices that this room is on fire and it's like the fire is around the fuse box and the telephone line, apparently. So she wakes up George and he wakes up the 2 oldest boys and starts like yelling to them, like,
help,
you know, get up, there's a fire, whatever. They frantically get everyone up and out of the house. There's a quote that when the 2 boys are running down the stairs, their hair got singed.
Oh God.
So it was like
bad,
that hot and that like close. So I think that he yelled up to them, that George yelled up to them, and that's how he got the boys up. It's a little bit confusing because it's described as a 2-story house, and they say George and Jenny slept upstairs, the parents slept upstairs, but then they talk about the rest of the kids sleeping in the attic. So I wonder, is it like a 2-story house with like a little attic in the top of
that's
the
what
roof?
I would picture,
which kind of feels like a 3-story house. And just wait, there's a basement, so I'm pretty sure that's a 4-story house.
They got a big house.
They keep calling it a 2-story house. Maybe this is just semantics, but I find it a little bit confusing about like where, what's the layout of all the rooms.
Well,
but I think
probably
there's like
the attic isn't allowed to be considered a room because it doesn't have like the right entry and exit points and maybe not enough windows.
Because it's just like a little staircase.
Right, which is sad
so I think
that people
like,
live up there.
There's like main floor, second story where George and Jenny lived. Or like slept, and then attic, which had a few bedrooms. Mm-hmm. So there's like multiple rooms in the attic, and that's where the rest of the children were sleeping.
Oh God!
And like I said, like a lot of like different articles say different things, and so it's like hard to know exactly. But this is like what I've pieced together has happened based on like the most consistent points throughout all the different sources. Mm-hmm. In this chaos, both parents and 4 of the children, Marion, the eldest girl who was asleep on the couch, Sylvia, the 2-year-old who was asleep in George and Jenny's room in her crib, and John and George Jr., the ones who'd gone to bed earlier and heard their dad yelling, they all made it outside.
Oh, good.
And they kind of looked around and they're like, where's the rest of the kids? There's 5 kids missing.
Oh my God.
Like they didn't make it out. So they try to go upstairs to get the younger kids, but the stairway was already on fire. So they couldn't go upstairs.
Oh my God.
Yeah. In the first interview with police after the disaster, John initially told the police that he had run upstairs or had run across the hall. I don't know if he was already upstairs or not, but that he had like physically seen his siblings and tried to wake them and been like, come on, let's go. But then later on, he changed his story and he said, no, I just yelled for them. I didn't actually see them. I just yelled for them.
It's a big change.
Yeah. And I think that he probably just yelled for them in the moment and didn't actually go physically see them and just started screaming because the house is on fire. But then, like, out of guilt, said that I went there and I, like, tried to get them out. And then maybe later realized, like, that's not really what I did. That's what I had hoped I did, maybe.
So were the five missing all in the attic?
They were all in the attic.
Oh, God.
My initial gut reaction when I was, like, reading this, and I remember, like, feeling this years ago when I first heard the story, was, like, how are you leaving your house without all the children? Like, how do you go outside when there's still kids upstairs? But I also think, like, when I thought about it more, our survival instincts are really strong, and our brains are, like, made for us to survive. So I can see you go into this, like, just get outside. I can't breathe. It's hot. Just get outside. We'll come up with a plan. We'll get the kids out. Like,
and maybe you see other kids running and you're like, oh, you're just sure like, they're
everyone's
all here.
Coming. They're coming. Out. Like, the boys came down. The rest of them are coming. Then we'll just, like, reconvene outside. Like, I think your initial reaction when you're in a burning building is just to get outside the building and then think once you're outside. So I kind of think that's what happened. Like, it was chaos. It was, like, seconds, and they all just, like, run out, and then they realize, fuck, five of the kids are still inside. And they're all in the attic.
Fucking sad.
Right? So the parents and the four kids are outside, and they're like, how do we get the rest of the kids? And at that point, they encounter the first of the very strange roadblocks that prevent them from being able to get help.
What?
One of them runs inside, and apparently, like, either the phone wasn't working, or they couldn't get to the phone because the fire had already been where the phone was going to be. I read two different things. So maybe they tried to use the phone and it wasn't working, or maybe they just couldn't get to the phone at all. Marion runs next door to get the neighbors to call. And also a neighbor passing by sees the fire and apparently pulled in somewhere. Allegedly, it was a local tavern to call the fire department, but no one could get a hold of an operator. So they're trying to call for help and no one can connect. And I guess this is, I mean, this is the 40s when you literally had, like, an operator was waiting to pick up the line. The switchboard operator. Okay, I'll connect you to the fire station or to the fire chief. Maybe it's because it's Christmas Eve. It's the middle of the night. Like, they abandoned their post. They were having a operator's party, like,
or maybe someone told an operator, like, hey, I'm gonna cover your shift, and they didn't.
Maybe,
and
then there's something,
no one there,
something a little sinister about it, so no one can get a hold of the operator.
Oh my God.
Yeah. One version of the story says that the neighbor eventually, like, goes to the home of the fire chief, FJ Morris. One says that eventually they were able to connect to an operator who then connects them to the fire chief. He, quote unquote, sounds the alarm, which is just starting a phone tree. That's what there's no siren. There's no nothing. So he calls one firefighter and says, there's a fire. We got to get there. And then that person calls the next firefighter. Yeah. It's Christmas Eve at 1:30 in the morning.
Who's going to answer?
No one can get the operator to connect their calls. It's a whole hot mess. The fire department.
Literally.
Heyo. I always have the accidental puns. The fire department was only 2.5 miles away, but they did not respond to the property with a truck until sometime between 7 to 9 a.m.
Are you kidding? The house would be fucking smoldering.
Yeah, it was gone. The house was gone by the time they arrived.
Oh my God.
The chief, who I have seen identified as a volunteer chief, so not the most, you know, not the most professional.
Although I will say, I have lived in a couple towns, Skagway being one of them, where it's a volunteer fire department, and they're really on their shit. Mm-hmm. They've got it together. So this town...
Well, to be a volunteer firefighter here, Matt was going to do it. It's so much... You have to go through, like, the fire academy.
Yeah,
you have to go through, like, essentially the same amount of training as a firefighter.
Right.
Which makes sense. But I'm also like, there's a reason you guys are short staffed, which is most people can't go 3 nights a week and every weekend for 8 months.
No.
Like, that's too
much. For no money. Because you're a volunteer.
For volunteer. Like, that's too much time. Can you teach them the basics in, like, a 4 week like, crash course?
Have, like, the real firefighters doing the hard stuff and I'll be
these
like,
these guys are just backup. They can yell. Whatever.
Yeah.
Fire. So this guy is maybe a chief, maybe a volunteer chief. He later said that he couldn't drive the truck and had to wait for someone who could drive the truck to respond. I don't know what this means. If he's, like, physically unable, if he, like, lacked the proper licensure or certification, if he, like, did not know how to operate that kind of truck, what the fuck are you doing being a fire chief then?
Right. There's kids dying.
I can see, like, in this day and age, maybe, because fire chief is more of, like, an administrative role.
Right.
But then you would always have someone there who can drive the fucking truck.
Right.
So, basically, the firefighters did absolutely nothing. He also said their department was very depleted because of the war. Fair enough. Like, a lot of men not around. Lots going on. That's fine. But... Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. It's just wild to me. Mm-hmm. So all this is happening. The fire department is trying to get their shit together. The family is standing out on the line, on the lawn, thinking like, our kids are in the house. What can we do before the flames spread any further and like kill our children? So George goes to grab his ladder that's always sitting in the same spot on the side of his house. And it's not there. So he tries climbing up the wall. He's like, I'll just climb up the side of the house. Slips, breaks a window, slices open his arm. His arm is bleeding everywhere. Apparently, pretty gnarly. He literally ignored the wound. Like, there's blood dripping down his arm, and he just, like, you know, ignored it, whatever.
Adrenaline, man.
What I think is really strange is that, like, the kids weren't at the windows. Like, the kids weren't, like, opening the windows, trying to get help. They weren't banging on the windows.
Were they dead already?
Maybe not. Maybe they weren't there. So I would think that if my house were burning down, I would be like at the window and I would fucking jump help. Out of the window before die. Also, like, I would assume... is a 1940s two-story house. Who the fuck knows? Like, slide out the side. Jump out of the window.
Like, there's eaves on the roof. Yeah, get out of there. Like something. Come on. So, unless the attic had no windows, which is possible.
True.
In which case, your children should not be living up there.
He, like, said... But he was trying to get to them and, like, thought that if he got up the side of the house, there was a way to get to them. So I think there was a window. Okay,
all right. Makes sense.
Maybe the smoke was so bad that they were already incapacitated, but that...
Yeah, like, maybe they never woke up.
This is quick. But that happens sometimes. Yeah. Like, that's the thing that kills you is the smoke. But, like, within a number of minutes, I don't know. I also read one, like, fire expert said that... kids actually tend to hide when there's a fire because they're scared. So, like, sometimes they'll go in to rescue children and they'll find them, like, under the bed or in the closet or behind the door. So, like, maybe all the kids were hiding.
This is a lesson that we need to talk to our children and say, do not hide. Do not hide. Get the fuck out of the house.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, get down. But, like, also, if there's a window. Yeah. But I'm, like, stop, also thinking,
drop, and roll.
They're outside, like, yelling, like, trying to help. I don't know. Yeah. It's just weird to me that the kids wouldn't, like...
It could be really loud in there, though, with a fire. This is true. It could be just, like, raging, and you just can't hear anything.
Maybe. Yeah. It's, like, maybe.
And you're, like, woozy from the smoke. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of maybes. Mm-hmm.
The boys tried to scoop water out of a barrel that they kept outside and found that it was frozen solid, of course, because it's too cold. Next, George was like, I'll back up one of my work trucks, because he's got these big coal trucks, and then I'll climb up on the back of the truck and I'll be able to get to the window. Like, I'll be able to get to
them.
Don't
let the coal get in the house. Fucking rager.
And your truck's gonna be on fire.
Oh my god.
So neither of his trucks would start.
Oh my god, this is like the day I'm having today. I'm having a George day.
Make sure your house doesn't catch on fire.
Oh god, thankfully there will be no fires in the stove tonight.
Perfect. So okay, you're fine then.
Yeah, fine.
So neither of the trucks would start, despite the fact that they had both been used the day before for work.
Yeah, that's
they wouldn't
bizarre.
Start. Some people speculate that, like, in their frantic rush, they flooded the engines trying to start it. But if that's the case, like, you can usually tell when the engine is flooded.
Yeah, and, like a truck driver.
Yeah, he's a truck driver. He knows what he's doing. Mm-hmm. If I can manage to start my truck 99% of the time without flooding the engine, George knows what he's doing. And you just wait a couple minutes, and you can try again.
Right,
so
right. Could it have been too cold, like the engines?
Maybe, but I don't know. Like, you would think... after a certain like amount of trying, that the truck would turn over. It's just weird. Yeah, it's weird that the ladder wasn't there, where it always is, and then neither of the trucks will start. Something is starting to feel like weird.
Fishy.
Yep. That's exactly what I wrote. Something feels fishy.
Twins.
I knew not to say it because I knew you were going to say it.
You just knew it.
Spooky.
We're in each other's brains.
So at that point, they're like out of options and they basically just like watch the house burn down slowly.
That's my like my biggest fear.
So sad.
My new biggest fear.
So sad. Finally, the firefighters show up the next day and there's obviously nothing they can do. Like the entire house has collapsed into the basement. Basically, it's just a heap of ash. Like there's it's just rubble. So the parents and the firefighters, one of whom is apparently Jenny's brother, start searching the ash for the remains of the children. Like, what can we find? But allegedly, they find nothing.
What?
So either the firefighters arrived like sometime between 7 and 8, and they searched from then until 10 a.m., searching the rubble. And what the family was told at the time is that they found absolutely nothing. No bones, no fragments, nothing. This also appears to be what was entered into the official record. Like, there was no remains collected at the scene. Years later, firefighters would say that they found internal organs, but they didn't tell the family. But
why wouldn't you tell the family?
Like, why the fuck would you withhold that information?
Right. What good is that doing anyone?
Right. And we'll talk more about this, like, alleged, you know, oh, no, we really did find something. We just didn't tell them, which is fucking stupid anyway. Basically, it was a relatively big house. I don't know. I don't know how many stories it was. It's described as two stories. But there's a basement and there's an attic. So it's a lot of rubble to sort through. Mm-hmm. Some people are like, it's not a very thorough search because it would take more than a couple, 2 or 3 hours to search through all of that.
Sure.
It's Christmas morning. Probably 5 kids have just died. Like, they're not, no one wants, I don't know, really, that they're not like doing an amazing job.
But I would
job.
Think they'd go the other way and be like, oh yeah, we found them. Because like, where else would they
think?
Be?
You, like, yeah. It's like, yeah, of course we did. Here are the remains.
Right.
Now you I have mean, something to even, bury of your children.
Right. They even found remains like in 9/11, right? Like in the rubble, which is like a lot of rubble. So
exactly. So the firefighters told them, don't touch the scene because we'll do a more thorough investigation, not on Christmas Day. But after 5 days, George couldn't look at the site any longer. And he bulldozed 4 to 5 feet of dirt over the whole like
what?
Area. He said he didn't want to look at the graves of their kids. They wanted to plant a memorial garden. I get it. On some level, it's like so impossibly sad and like so raw. Yeah. And I can't imagine just like staring at the rubble of your burned down house. Like, I also feel kind of like it would be like exposed. Like, those are my babies. Like, no, we need to cover it up. We need to, like, I don't know.
Well, yeah. And I guess at that point, you're like pretty sure they're in there. Yes. So it's like,
yeah, they're thinking like, well, yeah, these are the remains of my children.
Yeah.
We need to cover it up and plant a garden. And like, I don't want to look at this any longer.
God, how horrid.
But also, like, why fucking cover it all up? They haven't even investigated it. Like, they need to investigate.
Don't you
want to
know what started the fire?
Yeah.
Like, remember, Jenny, you heard something hit the roof?
Exactly.
Like, come on.
It was definitely an emotional decision and not a rational one. And definitely complicated this case more than it like needed to be. Within a few days of the fire, it's not clear, like some things said the next day, but I'm like, I don't think it happened on Boxing Day. Within a few days, the coroner convened an inquest and found that there was no foul play involved, that the fire had occurred due to, quote, faulty wiring. Oh, that's really convenient. You figured that out
very
quick.
Convenient.
Fucking 2 days after the fire. The 5 children, Maurice, who was 14, Martha, who was 12, Louis, who was 9, Jenny, who was 8, and Betty, who was 5, were officially declared dead on December 30th of 1945. And that definitely could be one explanation for what happened, that there was a wiring issue, the house caught fire, there was just a weird string of unfortunate circumstances that caused these children to die really tragically, but it may not exactly be what happened. After the fire, the family like really tried to move on and sort of like rebuild their lives as much as you can
half
your kids die. But they were left with all these weird nagging thoughts and questions about like what really happened. So they were like trying to make sense of everything, and they just found that some things didn't really seem to line up. It kind of sat weird with them. George thought it was weird that they would have an electrical fire when their electrical system in the house had just been replaced and extensively inspected, because they had just installed a new electric stove. Not just, but like in the couple years before, had installed a new electric stove. So they'd like all that was relatively new. It wasn't old. It had been inspected. If it was an electrical fire, why were the lights working? And the Christmas lights stayed on while the house was burning down. So there was still power to the house. You would think that if it was a fuse box issue or a wiring issue, that as soon as the fire started, they would lose power and the Christmas lights would go off.
Well, I have heard about like electrical fires happening in the walls, and like the walls are really hot. And and I mean, from what I've heard, I mean, I could be totally wrong, but I assume that there's still power going on in the house. I don't know enough about electricity to know one way or the other.
And like 1945 wiring versus like relatively modern
wiring. Yeah, like was it
wiring?
Knob and tube wiring?
Yeah.
Was it more modern? Like what was it?
Mm-hmm. shortly after the fire, they found the ladder that was always sitting on the side of the house down an embankment, like 75 feet away from the house. Like, just like weird. Thrown down an embankment. Weird. Like, how did it end up there? What?
Was it used to throw whatever was hit the roof that night?
Oh, who knows? Who knows? The telephone repairman came to repair the telephone line and restore service to the property. And he,
I mean, after it burned down?
Yeah. I don't know if they like rebuilt something, or like maybe they're just like, there's an open line. Like, there's, you can't just have an open line. Yeah. And he told them the line had not burned through as they'd previously been told, but the line had been cut.
Oh,
their phone
shit.
Line had been cut that night.
Wow.
Why would someone cut their phone line?
What the fuck? Yeah.
The wrong number call came in at 12:30 a.m. So someone cut their phone line after 12:30 a.m.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Jenny specifically had a very hard time believing that her children's bodies had been completely erased by the fire. She's like,
well, I mean, this is like a little morbid, but like, I have an urn with my mom's ashes in it.
And it's full of bone, right? And I remember as a kid,
yeah, like I imagined it was just dust. Yeah, and then I opened it one day and it was like, oh no, like there's pieces of my mom's bones. Yep. Like, you can clearly tell it's bones.
When I was a hospice social worker, I always warned families after they chose cremation. Just so you know, the funeral home might not tell you this, but cremains include bone. Just don't look at it don't look at it now. Look at it one day if you need to, or don't look at it at all later. But don't be surprised, because you're going to see bone fragment in there.
And
that's after like multiple hours in a special cremation oven at like 2,000 degrees.
Yeah, like I have to imagine the house fire is not as hot as a crematorium.
And
so,
like, it's mixed reports, but it was like burned somewhere between a half an hour to an hour for the house to burn down.
Wow,
nowhere. I know, like, quick, right? House. Well, it just shows you how different they built houses back then, that it would burn down so quickly. Uh-huh. And it was nowhere near the temperature that they would have in like a cremation oven.
Right.
Oven? Is that the right word?
Crematorium?
In a crematorium. Whatever.
Smokestack.
In the place where they burn the bodies.
In the place.
It gets
in the
very, oven. Very hot. And this house was not as hot.
Was not one of those.
Yeah. Jenny, the mom, read an article like shortly after about a fire that took place not super far from them, somewhere in the States, where a family of seven died in a three-story home that burned down. And the fire burned for about the same amount of time as the fire that burned down their house. And they found every single person's bones, including a baby that was a few months old.
Oh,
like,
my
all
God.
Of those bones were still intact in some fashion. Like, they found part of everyone's body.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that there would be nothing left.
Yeah, she's like, how could it be that every single one of my children's bones are completely turned to dust and, you know, that there's nothing left?
Mm.
She started saving bones out of the meat that they would eat, like if they would cook chicken or like cook pork or whatever, and burn them in her fireplace to see like how long do I have to burn these to reduce them
she
to dust.
Therapy.
And, I know. And like after hours, they would still be intact. She's like, this doesn't make any sense.
You know what? This is really morbid.
Tell me.
But we had like an infestation of porcupines last year when we first moved here.
I remember.
And a couple of them died. And one of them, to get rid of the body, we just put it in our big burn pile.
Uh-huh.
And it took so long for that thing.
It takes
to burn
a long time for
a long,
let's say, human tissue,
time.
Living tissue,
yes,
and bones to break down.
God, it took a long time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I am with Jenny.
And
on
she's
that.
Like, how can it be that like parts of our household appliances and the tin roof and like the oven, like there are recognizable things in this home, but it obliterated all of my children's body and bones? Like, really make sense to her.
How horrible.
Then there were even more sort of ominous and mysterious things that the family started to put together. In October of 1945, a visiting life insurance salesman, like a OG MLM, had shown up unsolicited at their house. And I think they were known to each other because he was also Italian and like knew of George. Mm. Tried to sell George a policy. George turned him down and by all accounts was polite. And the guy started threatening him and said, your house is going to go up in smoke and your children are going to be destroyed. And you are going to pay for the dirty remarks you've been making about Mussolini.
Oh, shit.
Mm-hmm. So that's a little strange that happened, like, to happen.
On the, like, hit the nail on the head there.
Yep. Not long after that, another, I guess this is just a thing, like laborers going door to door, unsolicited, looking for work, walking around. This guy was like walking around the house and made a comment about George's fuse box and said, that's going to cause a fire someday.
Okay, these are very mafioso things to say.
Quite. And confusing, because he's like, the electrical has all been updated. And I'm sure at the time he thought, like, that's just a bizarre sales tactic. This guy's like, oh, that's going to go up. You better hire me to work on your house. But after the fire, you know, it's kind of different, where he's like, it's weird that someone said that to me. And then my house burned down. The older sons remembered a strange car parked along the highway in town the weeks leading up to Christmas. And they recalled how the occupants seemed to be watching the Sauter children as they walked home.
Oh, God.
Weird. In what was either a complete coincidence or something that was 100% related to the fire, a man was seen stealing from the Sauter's property right around the time of the fire. So he was stealing a block and tackle, which is, I guess, like a tool that you use to remove an engine from a car. And it was either like sitting out on the property or it was in the garage. And, like, I read somewhere, like, maybe that's why their cars wouldn't start. But the cars,
that's what I was thinking.
But, like, the trucks had their engines in them still.
Oh. Okay.
To the best of my knowledge, they were like, oh, no, the trucks are intact. They've just been maybe just tampered with, or they just wouldn't start. So, yeah, this guy's, like, seen stealing
on Christmas
from
Eve.
Yeah, like, either right before or, like, during the fire. It's kind of unclear. Like, did he opportunistically just, like, I'm just going to sneak over while everyone's distracted by this fire? But, like, I don't think they had, like, sprawling acreage. Neighbors saw him stealing. So he admitted to cutting the phone line, which was 14 feet up a pole and then 2 feet away from the pole. So someone had to climb up 14 feet and then lean out 2 feet and cut the phone line.
But just to steal that weird little thing.
He said he thought he was cutting the power line. But why would you do that?
Why do that?
Wouldn't you get electrocuted if you cut a power line without the, like, proper tools?
Yeah, like if you're touching something that's touching the ground.
Catherine, ask Wesley.
Let us
know. I
know
she's listening. Would you get electrocuted if you just cut a power line all willy-nilly with no precautions?
But, good question.
Like, why would you cut the power line?
Why would that even be
important?
Why
would you cut a phone line? You're stealing something under cover of darkness.
Right. Like, just get out of there. Take your block and tackle and go.
What's even more strange to me is that even though he was identified, questioned by police, admitted, he was never charged, and his identity was lost with time.
The 40s, man.
So it's like, was there something more sinister at play? Was he stealing something from the property? Like, under the guise of, like, is that how, like, he was actually doing someone else's bidding by cutting the phone line?
Right.
But then was, like, just threw in a little petty theft to make it look, like, legit, to cover something up? Or was it just a total weird coincidence?
It seems like there's a lot of coincidences.
So many coincidences.
Too many coincidences.
Too many coincidences.
Too many.
Police said that they identified and traced the woman who called the house that night. You know, the, like, wrong number call at 12:30 a.m. Oh, yeah. And they said it was just an innocent wrong number.
How does all this happen on the same night?
Right?
Oh,
I don't know. I'm like, okay, well, it says who?
Right.
How the fuck do you know? I don't think they investigated very thoroughly. That's just my opinion.
It doesn't sound like they investigated anything. They were just like,
2 days later, they're like, it was an accident, no foul play. I'm like, did you even get a hold of that lady 2 days later?
Right.
Like, the bulk of the investigation, it seems like, happened after they ruled it no foul play.
So I will say, if it was just a coincidence, if it was just an electrical fire and this was all coincidental, like, they're unlucky.
Really unlucky.
Really unlucky.
That's a lot of coincidences.
It's a lot. Yeah.
Next, a bus driver comes forward and says he was driving through Fayetteville. Did I say it right?
You did. Good
on
job.
Christmas
Beautiful.
Eve, and he saw people tossing what appeared to be balls of fire onto the Sauter's roof. Like, what? That alone would be strange and concerning. Then combined with the fact that in the spring when the snow melted, Sylvia, the little one, was out playing in the garden because they didn't live there anymore, I don't think, but they would go visit and like tend to the property. They kept it forever. And she finds this small, hard, dark green rubber ball-like object in the brush, which George said looked like a pineapple bomb hand grenade.
Which is what she heard hit the
roof. He said it looked like some kind of incendiary device that they use in combat. He called it like a napalm something. Anyway.
Motherfuckers.
So they put all these pieces together. Hear a loud bang on the roof. Rolling sound that Jenny heard the night of the fire. Mm-hmm. The bus driver sees these fireballs. Toddler Sylvia finds something that resembles a grenade. It's all pretty...
Wasn't an accident.
It's all pretty damning evidence.
I'm pretty convinced.
That the police are doing fuck all with. Mm-hmm. Then witnesses start popping up claiming to see the children. Yeah.
I did not expect that to happen.
So first, someone comes forward to say that when all the neighbors gathered outside to watch the fire... They saw a car drive by with the Sauter children in it, and the kids were peering out and watching the fire.
My mouth is open. People can't see me, but my mouth is hanging open.
Lisey looks shocked. This is my intended reaction.
You got it. My mouth can't get any wider. Fuck?
And maybe didn't think anything of it because they thought like, oh,
they're going.
Someone's
away.
Taking the kids away because their house is burning down.
Oh my God.
Weird. But this is like a neighbor that lived on their street. So someone who knew the children. Weird. Another woman who operated a tourist stop between Fayetteville and Charleston said she had served them breakfast the next morning.
Oh my God.
She told the police, I served them breakfast. There was a car with a Florida license plate at the tourist court too.
Florida.
Fucking Florida, man.
Oh my God. Fucking Florida, man. Thanks, literally.
Florida. So George and Jenny are feeling like increasingly strange with all of these developments and pretty quickly came to believe, I think our children are still alive.
That I think would be almost worse than thinking they were dead. Like, how do I find you? It's like finding a needle in a haystack. Yep. Like,
yeah.
Oh my God.
So they hired a private investigator from a nearby town. When I looked up the nearby town, I can't remember the name of it. The like Wikipedia page said the population was 614. And I'm like, maybe because this is like West Virginia in the like coal towns, maybe the population was bigger then, because that's the case for a lot of these towns that are kind of sad now, but they were much bigger. Sure. But I don't think it was like the creme de la creme of private investigators. That's just my personal guess based on the fact that he came from a nearby town in rural West Virginia.
Yes. Also, you buried all the evidence. So.
Yeah. Not your best move.
No.
The investigator's name was CC Tinsley. Which is a great name, but not the best PI name, I feel like. Mm-mm. I would be like...
Tinsley's kind of cool.
Tinsley's cute, but it's like but too CC. Cute.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd be like Christopher Tinnington. No, that's
ooh,
not good.
Ooh, I like Tinnington. I no, like that's it? Good.
You need something more sort of gruff and like tough
it
sounding.
It sounds also like it'd be in the 40s, like Tinnington here.
Yes.
What's your problem?
Yes.
What do you need?
Tinnington can find your answers.
Hi, it's CC Tinsley.
CC Tinsley.
What can I help you with?
That's like, right. It's not a good
Tinnington has a much better ring to
like
it.
Like literally anything else, you know? Yeah. So this is what the PI finds out. So he did a good job.
Oh.
Remember the inquest that the coroner convened a few days after the fire where they immediately said it wasn't foul play. Guess who was on the coroner's jury? I don't know why there was a jury who ruled no foul play. The
who?
Fucking door-to-door insurance salesman who told him that his fucking house was going to burn down and his children would be destroyed.
How is that allowed?
Jury?
Oh my God.
What?
Conflict of interest?
I'll say. Oh, I threatened this man that his house would burn down and all his kids would die. I'm going to now sit on the jury to determine if when his house burned down and all his kids died, it was purposely or accidental. Like what?
That is...
Isn't that... Like fucking crazy
bullshit.
Yes.
How? I mean, I'm hoping that they did not know that that was the case when he was allowed to be on the jury.
Hopefully not.
But I mean, like, I guess how would they know?
Again,
they weren't there.
If this
when he
is a coincidence,
them.
They are the most unlucky people.
No,
and
it's
like,
not a coincidence.
So many coincidences.
It's the mob. They make everything look like coincidence.
I think you'd be onto something. So Tinsley,
I would know. I'm Italian.
Giordano. I would know because I dated an Italian when I studied abroad in
Italy.
There
you go. And we are all
he told me that
the know.
There would always be a piece of me in his heart. So I'm essentially Italian.
You're essentially Italian.
And
there
I will
always
Italian
be a piece of you
me.
In my heart.
Just kidding.
Too.
I didn't. There was no penetration in that relationship.
Well, that's a shame.
It is. I can do it all again.
Oh, God.
I think these podcast episodes are more fun when we're drinking wine.
Oh, I think so. I feel a little buzzed.
Doesn't take
and I haven't in a long time. Okay, if you see me yawning, it's only because I'm drinking more than I normally do.
Also, yeah, you're a little sleep deprived. Yeah. Okay, so Tinsley, aka Tennington.
Tennington.
Heard a rumor that the fire chief Morris, volunteer chief, whatever, had actually found remains in the fire, despite telling the Sodders that he hadn't. And remember, we talked about this earlier, that they were like, actually, we did, but we didn't tell them.
Yeah.
And that Morris had found a heart in the fire. And that he had put it in a metal box and buried it.
Excuse me?
Like what?
That's
apparently that is... Morris had confessed this to a local minister. And so George just went straight to that minister and was like, did Morris tell you this?
Yeah, tell me this.
And the minister
That's
was like,
very like,
yes, he did.
He did?
Yes. But wait. So
wait, that has very Snow White vibes. Isn't there a heart, in a metal box?
Bring me her heart in a box.
Yes, in a metal box. Yes.
Fucking stepmoms, man.
God. Jeez.
So George and Tinsley approach Morris and he's like, yes, it is true. I found a heart and I buried it in a box. And they're like, will you take us to where you buried it? And he's like, yeah, I'll take you there. So I read like different things about where it was, but one source said that it was like near the site of the fire, like on their own property that he did this. So he takes them, whether it was there or somewhere else, they dig it up and take the box to the local funeral home and give it to the funeral director. And like, can you identify this? And he opens it. He's like, yeah, this is a fresh beef liver. And this has never been exposed to fire. This is not a heart that was in a fire a year ago or however many months ago.
Everyone, my mouth is somehow open wider like, than it was.
What the actual fuck?
You went to the local Piggly Wiggly in Fayetteville and bought a beef liver and then put it in a box and then confessed to a pastor that you buried the child's heart.
Yes.
Hoping that it would get out. And brought people to it, thinking they wouldn't know. Yes.
So then soon after that, George hears rumors around the town that Morris had admitted to others that he'd buried the beef liver with the hope that finding remains would be enough to get the Sodders to end their investigation and just drop it.
Also, you can buy a beef heart.
Buy a heart.
Why a liver?
And like, burn it in your fireplace for also, a half liver an hour.
Literally nothing like a heart.
Nothing.
Nothing like a heart. Fucking like it stupid. Looks closer to a tongue than a heart.
Like my question is, was this an act of like a kind person trying to offer closure and knowing like if they find remains, they'll drop it and they'll move on with their lives and they'll find peace? Or is this the act of someone trying to get someone to drop something because he knows something else, or like he's trying to cover something up, or he's involved in something?
Regardless, he's an idiot. Like, go to a farm and get a pig heart or something. Like,
there are hearts available. Just dig up a grave.
Yeah, seriously, at this point.
It's not that hard to do.
You're already involved in some bullshit. Why not dig up a body as well?
You're going to lie. Have some fun with it. Be convincing. A liver. So stupid. In 1947, George and Jenny sent a letter about the case to the FBI, and they actually received a reply from J. Edgar Hoover.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, although I would like to be of service, the matter related appears to be a local character and does not come within the investigative jurisdiction of this bureau.
Oh.
And they said, we would assist if we would get permission from the local authorities, but the Fayetteville police and fire departments declined their offer.
Why would you do that?
Why?
Also, when is a small town police department able to say, no, FBI, you're not welcome here?
Stupid. The FBI did get involved later once there was more national attention. So I guess like there's only sometimes when they feel comfortable being like, oh, we're going to step in. And at this point, they were like, no, we sort of defer to your local authorities. And the local authorities were like, no, we got it. We're just burying fucking beef livers over here.
Yeah, beef livers. Nothing to see.
So over the next few years, the tips and the leads continue to come, but there was nothing ever really promising. George, it's so sad. He saw a photo once in the newspaper of school children in New York City and was convinced that one of them was Betty. So he drove all the way to the city, to Manhattan, went to the school in search of the child.
Oh, George.
Her parents were like, fuck off. Like, no, this is our
kid. Yeah, this is my kid. She came from my loins.
Like, to have anything to do with him. Sad. Oh. In August of 1949, the Sodders convinced a Washington, D.C. pathologist named Oscar B. Hunter to excavate the site and to do like a really thorough search of the rubble. So over the course of the investigation, they uncovered several things. They found damaged coins. They found a partly burned dictionary that had belonged to the kids. And most interestingly, they found several small bone fragments, which were determined to be human vertebrae.
Oh, intriguing. Wow.
So Hunter sent the bones to the Smithsonian Institution, where they were analyzed by a scientist named Marshall T. Newman, and this is his report. The human bones consist of four lumbar vertebrae belonging to one individual. Since the transverse recesses are fused, that's the part of my back that I broke.
Oh, it's like you're attached to the story.
I was like, oh my God, I know all about the transverse recesses of the spine because I fucking shattered mine.
You know what that is.
It's all good. The age of this individual at death should have been 16 or 17 years. The top limit of age should be about 22, since the centra, which normally fuse at 23, are still unfused. On this basis, the bones show greater skeletal maturation than one would expect for a 14-year-old boy, who is the oldest missing Sodder child. It is, however, possible, although not probable, for a boy 14 and a half years old to show 16 to 17 maturation. So basically, he's saying this couldn't be any of the kid's bones because these are bones.
It's a different kid.
These are bones like older than the bones of the children who are missing. He also added that the bone fragments showed no sign of exposure to flame.
What?
They hadn't been burned. He also agreed that it was very strange that those bones were the only ones found, since a wood fire of such short duration should have left full skeletons of all the children behind. And this is like the expert. So this is the weirdest part to me.
Whose bones were those?
The report concluded that most likely the bones were in the dirt that George had used to fill the site. I'm like, where the fuck are you buying fucking bone dirt?
What's happening in Fayetteville?
Oh my God. Like, that's the most insane part of the whole story to me, that you can just buy fill dirt and it might just have some fucking
bones,
children
in
vertebrae in it, or like teenage vertebrae. God. Yeah.
We should talk to Paige about that. She'd probably be like, oh yeah, there's bodies everywhere.
Dab a dozen. Tinsley said that he confirmed that the bones came from a nearby cemetery, but there's no record anywhere of like why he said that. Why would he think that, and what proof did he have, and like how did he know that? So who knows?
I mean, maybe Morris finally wisened up and was like, maybe I should stop using beef parts and I'll go dig up some bones.
Well, and then you wonder, like, did the police know, or someone know, that this like pathologist was coming to conduct this dig?
So they put something
in there.
And so
they just found some fucking bones and threw them in. Mm-hmm. But they hadn't been burned. You should put them in your... Here is the moral of the story. If you're going to fake evidence in a fucking fire, fucking burn it first.
Oh my God.
Wow. That should be the first step.
I cannot imagine the ups and downs these poor parents have faced. Like, they're in there. No, they're not. Yes, they are. No, they're not. Yes, they are. No, they're not. Like, oh,
I just cannot imagine it.
But now I'm like really convinced they weren't in there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the investigation at this time started kind of attracting more national attention, and the West Virginia legislature actually held two hearings on the case in 1950. Unfortunately, it didn't really lead to anything. And afterwards, the governor and the state police superintendent told the Sodders that the case was hopeless and it's officially closed at the state level.
Oh, wow.
The FBI decided that it had jurisdiction as a possible interstate kidnapping, that maybe the kids were like taken somewhere, but they dropped the case after 2 years because there was no leads. Like, there's just no evidence, right?
I mean, I would also have to argue that the kids were old enough, especially the what was he, 16?
To make themselves
16?
Known.
Yeah, to be like, hey, yeah. I belong to other people.
I was kidnapped.
Yep. Unless the mafia was like, you better not say a word or you're swimming with the fishes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. The Sodder family was bound and determined to find answers. So the end of the official investigation didn't really mean anything to them. Mm-hmm. In 1952, they paid personally to erect two billboards, one at the site of the former house and one along the highway nearby. And apparently for decades, these were like a landmark for locals, like the Sodder billboards, because the billboards had all the photos of the kids' faces. Oh. And at first it was a $5,000 reward, and then eventually it was increased to $10,000 reward. But they were kind of like faded and like janky, like sort of like budget billboards. I mean, to lose
one kid is hard enough, but to lose five all at once?
No. But it actually worked. Like a lot of eyes saw the billboards and it generated more tips. So they kept rolling in. A woman from St. Louis wrote them a letter saying that their oldest girl, Martha, was in a convent there.
Oh my God.
Another tip came from Texas, where a patron in a bar said that they overheard an incriminating conversation about a long ago Christmas Eve fire in West Virginia.
Oh.
Someone from Florida wrote to them claiming that the children were actually staying with a distant relative of Jenny's. And George followed up on every lead. He was driving across the country.
Poor George.
Of course, like, you know, he's looking for answers that never came. Right. When it came to the relative in Florida, he showed up demanding proof that this guy's kids were his own. And he's like, fuck off. But apparently they did look like the Sauter children because they're literally related.
Right.
I just can't imagine how desperate he must have been feeling. Like, I would do that. If I thought my kid might be alive, I would drive.
Oh, yeah.
Drop I'd everything. Fly around the world. Like, I would do anything if I thought I might see him again. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine it.
No. Makes me sick.
Ida Crutchfield is a woman who's referred to a lot in this case. She's kind of like so-so. I don't really believe her. But she ran this hotel in Charleston, and she claimed to have seen the kids about a week after the fire. She couldn't remember the exact date, but she said that the children had come in around midnight with two men and two women, all of whom appeared to be of Italian extraction, is her quote. Whatever the fuck that means. She said she tried to talk to the kids, and one of the men, she said, this is her quote, one of the men looked at me in a hostile manner. He turned around and began talking rapidly in Italian. Immediately, the whole party stopped talking to me. She said that they left the hotel early the next morning, and that was all she ever saw of them. But investigators don't really think that her story is credible because the first time that she saw photos of the children was 2 years after the fire, and then she waited 5 years to come forward.
Yeah.
So it's
maybe her hotel needed a little business.
Yeah, like I don't know, people like I don't really understand it. People want to like insert themselves in these things like, and they really feel have no place.
Like they're part of it or
yeah,
or
like something. They want to be a part of it.
Yeah.
It's just sad cuz it's false hope if it's not true.
Totally.
In 1967, they received another tip from the Houston area where a woman said that Louis had revealed his true identity to her one night after having too much to drink, and she said that she thought him and Maurice were living in Texas somewhere. So George,
well, that's a small state to search. Just drive. Right?
George forever. And his son-in-law Grover Paxton, great name, drove there, but she wouldn't speak with them. The woman wouldn't talk to them. So then,
that's cruel.
They spoke with police there, and somehow police were able to help them find the two men that she had indicated she thought were the boys, and they found these men and spoke with them, but they denied being the missing sons. And Grover Paxton said that years later doubts about that denial still lingered in George's mind for the rest of his life. He wondered, were those actually my sons that I was talking to?
And
like the challenging thing is, like, you go missing when you're five. 20 years later, 25 years later, you look so different that it's like, maybe that could be. I think about how different Russell looks from like 2 years ago. One day when he's an adult, like, I don't know, you could show me photos of 10 adults right now. Yeah. And I'm like, well, he could look like any of those people when he grows up.
Well, look at the pictures of ourselves as kids.
Like, exactly.
You can see it, but it's not like, it's a distant
It's relative. Not like, oh yeah, automatically, that's definitely that's them.
Yeah.
In 1968, more than 20 years after the fire, Jenny found an envelope addressed only to her in the mail, and it was postmarked in Central City, Kentucky, but it had no return address, and inside was a photo of a man in his mid-20s. On the flip side, a handwritten note said, Louis Sauter, I love brother Frankie, little boys, A90132 or 35. Which is like, is that a phone number? Like, what is it? She and George thought right away it looked like their son. He was 9 at the time of the fire. He had the same dark curly hair, the same brown eyes. He had the same nose. His like left eyebrow tilted upwards, and it was the same in this man. So once again, they hired a private detective, and this is so sad. They sent the guy to Kentucky. I'm sure they paid him, and then they just never heard from him again.
Oh, what a piece of shit.
Uh-huh. So he just took their money and left.
Oh, man.
This is so sad. They added the photo to the billboard because they thought that might be him in present day, but they didn't put any identifying information because they thought if the kids are in danger, Yeah. And that's why they haven't contacted us. We don't want to put them in further danger. So they didn't put the location or anything. And then they blew up the picture and hung it above their fireplace, like hung it in their house because they really thought that it could have been him. Which is just so heartbreaking.
Could it have been him? Or do we know something? Oh, no, it could have been. Okay.
In 1968, George said in an interview that looking for his children had been like hitting a rock wall. We can't go any further. But he said, we're going to keep trying. In another interview, he said, time is running out for us, but we only want to know. If they did die in the fire, we want to be convinced. Otherwise, we want to know what happened to them. Sadly, he died the next year.
Oh, no.
I know, in 1969, without any type of closure. Jenny lived for another 20 years. She died in 1989. She wore black for the rest of her life to represent her mourning.
Poor Jenny.
She remained in the family home, and she tended to the memorial garden that they planted at the site of the fire until she died.
Wow.
Just, like, so sad.
Would you rather believe that they died in the fire or that they were out there?
I'd, like, kept thinking this, and I just don't know. I guess... it is easier, maybe not easier, but like you want to live with like hope in your heart that maybe you'll see your kid again. And like somehow, and that, like, even though that's like
a happy life.
Yeah. Even though that's like torturous, that's better to believe than like that your child is dead.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think I agree with you.
Like you would want to just hope maybe they're alive out there having a good life somewhere.
Yeah. Like even if it wasn't with me, at least they're out there living their best life.
Like, maybe they are just somewhere far away and they're okay and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
After Jenny died, the remaining children finally took the billboards down. But they were up for a really long time. They all vowed, like, we'll continue looking for answers, except for John. John is the one that was supposed to have awoken his siblings, but maybe did or didn't go into the room. And he said the family should accept what happened and move on with their lives. Hmm. I'm sure that he felt some, like, guilt and trauma around it. And I don't know, it's hard to say how you'd react when you're like living in that family. The surviving Sauter children, along with older Fayetteville residents, people who lived there for a long time, their sort of theory is that the Sicilian mafia was trying to extort money from George and that the children may have been taken by someone who knew about the planned arson and said they would be safe if they left the house. So maybe they were taken back to Italy to keep them safe. And what they sort of told themselves is that if the children had survived all those years and were aware that their parents and the siblings had survived too, maybe they avoided contact in order to keep everyone safe. Like, we know we can never see you again because it would bring about harm. I don't know. Like, that's really sort of convenient excuse for why they would never reach out to you. But it's certainly within the realm of possibility, I think.
It's also possible that they just, I mean, I think about my own mom and like I have, you know, fragmented memories of her, and then I have a lot of memories of things people have told me or videos I've seen or pictures I've seen, but like if you were to just take me at 8 years old without any pictures, nobody to talk to me about her, it'd be very easy to forget who those people were. So you know, especially if you put them into a totally different culture like Italy,
if you took them to Italy,
like it would be so easy.
Your
to
name
just,
is
it's done. Your new
Chelsea
life
Tennington
this.
Now,
right?
And that's who you are, and then we tell you that for 15 years. Sylvia Sauter Paxton. She was the one who was 2 at the time of the fire. She was the remaining sibling, and she died in 2021.
Oh wow!
Yeah, she said that her and her father often stayed up late talking about what they might have thought happened, and that she firmly believed that her siblings survived and were alive somewhere.
Wow.
Like, nowadays, a lot of web sleuths have taken on the case, but sadly, there just isn't really any new evidence to be discovered. Like,
well, it was so long ago, too. Like, where are you going
like
to...
It's 40s?
All... Yeah, you need the evidence in hand. Like, there's
the one
online.
Thing that I thought was interesting, though, like, they don't know where the bones, the vertebrae went that were found in the property. Like, they were...
Convenient.
The Smithsonian Institute gave them back to George, no one knows where they ended up. I just thought it would be interesting to do DNA on that now that we have DNA to see like whose bones were those.
Yeah, right. Who
and
else
I
died?
Also wondered like now that we have different technology and we can like, I don't know, we have more sensitive technology. Right. Could you not go back to the property now and like sift through right. the dirt now and
yeah, see if you find any bone? Is the garden still there?
So like I found an article from a few years ago. Oh, I forgot to say my sources. Okay, just trust that I didn't plagiarize.
I trust you.
It's like NPR, a bunch of old newspapers, a blog of an NPR reporter who like was like, there was more information than I could fit in my 8-minute snippet. So I made a blog about like everything else that I figured out.
Dedication.
Where was I going with this?
Oh, I asked you if
there was a photo of like what the property looks like now, but it was like really pixelated. Mm-hmm. It was provided by like one of the grandchildren or something like that. And it's like the garden is gone. It's like a house. Like you would never know.
Oh,
I know. Sad. But I'm like, could we excavate your front yard?
People right. Could who we live just there tear now? Up your house?
And just to see.
Check it out. Because
web sleuths are very curious.
We need to
know. We have a podcast and we would just like love to find out. Because I'm like, could we like, I don't know. Could what we not this? Find more?
If people Googled this, what is it called? The Sodder children or what?
Yeah. Yeah. Like what is, I'm trying to remember what the Wikipedia page is called. Sodder children disappearance.
Wow.
Like the Medium article is the disappearance of the Sodder children. Where are the children? Is like a mystery of missing children haunts West Virginia town. So it's like, yeah, they don't necessarily say, you know, the fire or like death or whatever. The most stories sort of acknowledge that it's a mystery.
Yeah.
Most like reporters, investigative journalists, folks who look at it now think that the kids died in the fire and that they just didn't do a thorough enough investigation at that time.
But I don't necessarily investigation.
I don't necessarily accept that. Yeah. I no. mean, like, is it possible? Maybe. There was the NPR gal, Stacey Horn. This is a 2005 interview, and I think she summarized it well. Even though I think they died in the fire, there is enough genuine weirdness about this whole thing and a couple of things that were not adequately investigated that if someday it is learned that the children did not die in the fire, I won't be shocked. But weirdness does not necessarily equal murder, and I don't think that's what happened. So she's kind of like, yeah, it's pretty fucking weird. If it turned out that they didn't die in the fire, I would be like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is it bad to say like I would like to believe that they're alive?
No, I don't think that's bad.
I hope that they're alive. I mean, like, they'd probably be dead now, but I hope that they survived and that they had good lives. I think the thing that I come back to, even despite like even all the weird coincidences about the ladder and the truck and the phone line and the theft, if all of those things are coincidences, how do 5 skeletons disappear?
Yeah, that's
especially when they went back and did a more thorough search.
Yeah, the second search really is damning. How do we not find anything? How do we find vertebrae that belong to someone else, but we don't find bones from the actual bodies?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's so tragic.
I know. Yeah, I should have done a trigger warning. Very sad. But I think they survived, so...
Right. So they're living in Italy. They just were separated from their family forever.
Italy's great. They're just eating cheese and pasta, living the dream,
24/7.
Drinking wine.
Unless they were probably, if they were alive, they were probably made to work for the Sicilian mafia.
They're brainwashed.
I'm Sicilian. My grandfather came from Sicily, so I could be related to these fuckers.
Oh my God. Probably a mafioso. Is it mafiosa, if it's a woman?
Like in Harry Potter. It's leviosa. It's mafiosa. Oh,
what do you think happened?
Well, at the beginning, I thought it was definitely the fire. And then more and more things happened.
Yeah.
And I just feel like, what landed on their roof? What about the phone call? What about all these things that she kept getting woken up?
Don't quite add up.
Yeah. And
how could the guy who threatened him be on the fucking inquest jury? Yeah, why did the kids not do their nighttime chores as usual? Like, why didn't they just turn off the lights and shut the curtains? And
the sister didn't see anything. The sister who was sleeping on the couch, she had nothing to add.
Strange. What sucks is we'll never know. I mean, we'll probably never know unless there's like some crazy 23andMe situation where someone in Italy does a 23andMe and it's like,
wait a second,
you're a 90% match for these people in West Virginia. Right. And then it's like, whoa, they really did live and they had families. I hope that happens.
Me too. I am in the same boat as you that, like, I like to think that they survived. Because obviously that's, like, more conspiratorial and it's kind of fun, even though it's sad.
And no one died, and so that's good.
Yeah, the fire thing is just, like, so
dying in a fire tragic. Is way worse.
Yeah, but I do think that it wasn't an accidental fire.
It sure seems like they did not. Yeah.
Yeah, if they did die in the fire, I don't think it was
that it was revenge for Mussolini.
Which is so fucking bizarre Mussolini. In itself. Like, really? You killed kids for Mussolini because someone was talking against him? Like,
Google dude, it. Not a very nice guy.
No. And if you're so into Mussolini, why did you come to America? Why didn't you stay with Mussolini?
Like, yeah. What? See how good things were in Italy under his rule.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Good God.
Not great.
Not great. Wow. That's I've never heard that story. Never even heard a hint of that story.
Really?
Yeah.
It comes up in, like, you know, when you look up, like, interesting unsolved mysteries.
Yeah.
Or are you a normal person that doesn't look that up when you climb into your bed at night? You're like me. You look those things
up. I'm like you. I also am, you know, subscribed to, like, weird Reddit unexplained threads and history subreddits.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that shit.
I, like, subscribed to, like, I don't know, some, like, Canadian subreddits when I first joined Reddit. Uh-huh. So now I always get, like, the email digest and it'll just be, like, stuff about Canada. And I'm like, that's, I at the time it felt like, oh, I'm Canadian. And now that I'm seeing it every day, it doesn't really feel, like, relevant like, to my
this
life.
This isn't, I don't care about this. Stop telling me I know about Canada.
Yeah, I know plenty about Canada.
Wow, I feel like we will never know, especially because they're all dead now, or I'd assume they're all dead.
Yep.
Like you said, I think the 23andMe Ancestry.com thing is, like, the only
possibility.
Yeah.
Or, like, a great-great-grandchild comes forward one day and is like, this is a weird story of my family that I've been
told. My nonna told me that,
I
have relatives in WV. Oh, West Virginia.
West Virginia.
Yeah. Mountain Mama.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, I feel like I need more wine after that.
Sorry.
Tragic tale.
It's funny because I'm like, this is exciting. Ooh, like, intrigue. I'm like, dead children. Yeah. No,
But maybe not.
Maybe just kidnap children, which is one step better than dead children.
Wow. You know, it's what one of the things that came to my mind while listening to that was, remember when Sam Sayers disappeared and all those reports came forward of people spotting her. She crossed the border.
She was in Canada. She was, like, disheveled, walking along the, like, she was spotted, like, right where my parents live, allegedly.
I remember that.
What's weird is that because she was bald with tattoos on her head, I feel like it's pretty hard to accidentally spot her.
Totally.
But I also don't believe everyone who said they spotted her.
And I really think she's up on that mountain.
We need to do a joint episode
about that. Because that was, like, our first... That's how we,
that's how we became friends.
It's because of Sam's home.
Oh my God, that's our origin story. Are we bad people?
Oh, yikes. Yes, we are.
We're in it together.
Wow. Well, thank you for sharing that.
I'm sorry for sharing that.
And I hope that never happens to anyone ever again.
Oh, all right. Well, do you have a good thing?
I have a missing woman.
Oh, missing woman. Oh, God.
another
downer. We just covered five missing people. Now we've had another. I didn't think about that.
This is a recent one.
Oh, no.
And it's another weird thing, just like your story. It's a weirdo. Mm. Well, it's not a weirdo. It's weird. She's not a weirdo. She's missing. So this is in North Carolina. And her car was found.
Mm.
And that's weird. I need to get my thoughts in order.
You can tell the episodes where we've had wine by the end.
Yeah, you can.
They're better. They're
more fun. Car was missing. And that's weird. Jesus, take the wheel.
Satan.
Oh, God.
Okay.
Okay. So let me restart this. Okay. Let me restart my brain here. Yeah. Okay. So she is missing. Her car was found in a DMV lot.
Mm.
And the person who'd been driving her car was her new boyfriend.
Oh, no. It was him.
And he was found passed out in the car. They took him, you know, to jail or whatever.
Passed out, like, drugs.
It's not clear if he was drunk or on drugs or what, but he was just like passed out in the car. Mm-hmm. And then it was a couple days later that she was reported missing.
Oh, no.
And then they discovered, oh, that was actually her car.
That was her car and that was her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Oh, no.
So here's the details. This was from Charlotte, North Carolina. Her name is, I'm not sure if it's Alicia or Alicia, A-L-L-I-S-H-A, mm-hmm. Watts. I'm going to say Alicia.
Mm-hmm.
She was reported missing to the Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department. She was last seen on July 16th.
Oh, no.
She is a black woman. She's 39. She's from Moore County, North Carolina. And by all accounts, you know, she's very important in her community. She would never just disappear. She wouldn't just go off. This is very unlike her.
Out of character.
And yeah, totally out of character. And this boyfriend, let me see, what's his name?
Piece of shit murderer face. Yeah,
piece of shit murder guy.
It's actually good in a way that we don't have that many listeners because I would have been sued for defamation already.
There's time. There's time. Like,
if and when we become more popular, I will have to watch what I say. Shit murderer. Maybe not. Maybe not.
I don't think so. I think there's been much more awful things said in the world than what you're saying.
Thank you.
Anyway, piece of shit murder face James Dunmore was her new boyfriend.
Motherfucker.
Yeah, so she was so the night that she was last seen, July 16th, she was coincidentally traveling to Charlotte with her new boyfriend, James Dunmore, in the black Mercedes SUV that was later found.
Oh, a nice vehicle.
Yeah, a nice car.
Oh, no.
Nice car.
Uh-oh.
And like I said, it was found abandoned, and he was in it. So lots of weird stuff. They searched the area for her, obviously, were not able to find it. The car was towed to CMPD for processing. They haven't said if they found anything.
Poor thing.
And as per usual, the family has kind of been kept out of the loop. They don't really know what's going on. They haven't been given any details.
How sad.
So sad. And the family says that, you know, with each passing day, they worry more and more, of course. I mean, that was 10 days ago now. We're recording on the 26th. So probably is not feeling or looking good, in their opinion.
Horrible. I hope she's found.
Me too. So her sister, Shakita, said that, you know, James Dunmore, her boyfriend, was taken into custody after the authorities discovered that her phone pinged at his home before she vanished.
Uh-oh.
So that's really not.
Well, I hope that they do an adequate job of investigating this.
Yes, that's the least that we can hope.
Because I already solved it. So if they could just catch up.
Yeah, if they could just get us the details. the Anson County Sheriff's Office is asking anyone with information about Watts to call them, the Moore County Sheriff's Office, or CMPD. So
thank you for sharing.
Yep. I hope that she is found.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now tell us a good thing.
Yeah. I took Eloise on her first hike yesterday.
So sweet.
It was really fun, even though she literally screamed bloody murder the whole drive there and the whole drive back. And
you're like, this is calming.
Yeah. And she loves it once we're there. It's just the car ride.
She doesn't like riding in the car.
Now, it used to be not this way, and now it is this way. And I wear earplugs in the car because it's so bad.
Yep.
And I hate that she's so sad, but like, we have to go places. Yeah. We can't.
Well, just and like, she's got to get used to it. That sounds cruel, but like, she's going to have to ride in the car sometimes.
I mean,
for everyone's sanity, you need to leave the home.
Totally. I get anxiety about going places.
I bet. I'm
like, she's just going to
scream.
But again, we have to go places. But so we went on this hike.
And it was good.
We went and it was beautiful and she loved it. And, you know, she made her little coo-coo sounds looking around, which is the cutest. And it was sunny and beautiful and just felt really good to get outside. And then also, Ben bought me peonies today for, you know,
Alaska
just like vase,
peonies.
Just pretty peonies to put on our table.
Oh, I love that. Well done, Benji.
Me. Yeah, it was just really nice. And I needed it because today was a rough day. So
I'm glad he's taking good care of you.
Yeah, me too.
Although he did not pour you enough wine.
No, he didn't. But also, it was probably good because I'm already feeling what he did.
You're lightweight now. It's a nice thing. I actually never returned to my previous alcohol tolerance post having a baby and then nursing.
I probably won't either.
It's kind of nice because all I need is one glass of wine.
Right.
Good. Okay. My good thing is, we got to spend the weekend with my niece.
Looks so nice.
And it was really sweet. We only get to see her like once a year. So, and it was really nice because like now Russell's old enough. Like last summer, he like thought she was cool, but they couldn't really like play together.
Yeah.
Like he was still a little bit too young. This summer, he was so excited to see Tay-Tay. Aww. Like just so excited. And then they were like playing together and like getting along. And like,
that's so nice.
You know, she was being like really sweet and nurturing and like, look, Russy, like this is how you do this. And like showing him things. And then like I'd be in the house and I'd just hear like, Tay-Tay, Tay-Tay, Taylor, come here. I want to show you something. Come here. Like he was just like so happy to see her.
Just loving cousin time.
Yeah. So it was really sweet. And their flight got super delayed on Friday. So they, like, they were supposed to get in at like 9 and then they ended up getting in at like almost 2. Oh, so it was like, well, someone has to go pick him up. So like, let's go see Oppenheimer, like a 10, because there were still tickets for the 10 p.m. showing. So we went and then like it finished and then we went like straight to the airport and picked him up because the movie theater was like 5 minutes from the airport.
Oh, that's amazing.
And the movie was so good. It was really, really good. So I definitely recommend it. That's a long one to leave your baby, but
it is. Yeah, we're probably gonna go see the Barbie movie because it's only it's 2 hours.
Ryan Gosling in it.
Yeah, I was like, why didn't she see the Barbie movie? But I get you to fill the time.
I really wanted to see, and also Barbie is playing on the island right now, and I don't know.
Okay, so you can see it there.
So I can see it here. I've worked every night this week, so I haven't seen it, but I will see it.
Yes.
So I was like, Oppenheimer was my number one. I hate to say that. Sorry, Ryan Gosling. But it was really, really good.
Disappointed in you.
Once you can see it in your home, I definitely recommend it.
Okay. All right. Yes. Yeah, it looks really good. I'm really excited to see it. What's the actor's name?
Cillian Murphy.
Yeah, he looks really scary. Like pictures I've seen of him.
Yeah, he's really skinny. He lost a lot of weight for this role.
Yeah. Oh, but that's like your thing.
He's 100% would.
Yeah.
You know I love a sickly man.
I know you do. Yeah.
Don't ask me why.
Oh, man. Well, I can't wait to see both of them.
Yep.
Barbenheimer. Isn't that what they're calling it?
Yes. That's what I wanted to do, but I'm a parent. Not young, I'm a working parent.
Yeah, I know.
I don't have the capacity.
It's like, I remember that those days when you could go to a double feature and it was just, you know,
when I was like 12.
Yeah.
Now, I don't have the energy
for it.
That'd
be 5 hours of movie watching. Dude, not including
Oppenheimer, it was like 3 hours plus all the previews and it started at 10 p.m. I was like, this is
who am I?
That's how I knew it was really good because I was like engaged the whole time and it was like 1 something and my bedtime is usually 10.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. So those are those are my good things.
That's a great thing. Those are really good things.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing all of the things.
Sorry for the downer episode.
It's perfectly acceptable. We had wine to tone it down.
So much wine. There's still a little bit left.
So much. Good job.
I'm doing well.
You are.
It's been a long week. Oh my God. It's only Wednesday.
Oh God. It is. Oh Lord.
Well, slide into our DMs on Instagram, Easy Bake Coven Podcast. No dick pics, please.
No.
Unless you're Ryan Gosling.
Unless, which case, please.
Very much please. Very please, sorry, as my son says. Not sorry, Matt. He doesn't listen.
Please.
Email us at Easy Bake Coven Podcast.
The Easy Bake Pod.
The Easy Bake Pod at gmail.com. Website www.easybakecovenpodcast.com. That's what I was doing.
Yeah, you just mix the two.
All the like, things. Subscribe, leave us a review.
Rate. Send us your stories.
Yep.
All of that jazz. And all that jazz. If your name is Tinkletooth or whatever we said, and you've got Tennington. A PI case.
Tennington, tell us your stories of being
a PI.
You
can't see my jazz hands, but I'm shaking them.
She's like a young cabaret performer, a young Liza Minnelli with better hair.
Me. Lacey Liza.
No more wine. Oh, God. No more wine for us.
Lacey Tennington at your service.
She is dancing. Oh, God.
I might have to upload this clip.
This is what happens when we're both sleep deprived and alcoholized.
and needing to feel a little happier after a sad story.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry
all
about
of
that.
The above. See, all of the above.
Step three, cookie dough as soon as we hang up.
Yeah. I'm thinking about the ice cream in my freezer. Already.
Yep. It's dessert. This is the one thing that's shitty about not having a treat on the podcast anymore. It's true. After but the sad story.
I was thinking tonight that I was like, thank fucking God I didn't have to bake anything today.
Because it wasn't going to happen.
No, it wasn't going to happen.
No.
So I'll just eat my feelings in my ice cream bowl.
Love that.
So, who am I kidding? Ice cream carton. I'm not putting it in a bowl.
We're all friends here. We can be open and honest.
Let's be honest.
You are seen and appreciated for who you are, Lacey.
Thank you. And for my honesty.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Friends.
On that note.
On that note. As always, don't forget to keep it spooky.
And sweet in your ice cream carton.
Happy haunting!